Hi, everybody. Welcome to our Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast for this week. We are this week, as always, brought to you by Loot Crate. The best surprise you know is coming. Be sure and go to lootcrate.com and check out all the goodies they've got for you. And kind of quiet, really, right now as we tape late in the week. The Chicago Bears have all gone fishing. We were up at Hallis Hall Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and they're off Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So it was kind of wrap up the first half of the season, and let's get ready to next Monday to start moving on to the second half. I'm Hub Arkish, along with Arthur Arkish, with you every week here to talk some Bears football. And I guess the place to start with all that, Arthur, is how they wrapped up the first half of the season. I don't want to relive the Zach Miller thing. It just ugly, gruesome. It happens. It's part of the game. It never makes it any better, any easier. Reports are that he is doing well. It's going to take a while for them to figure out where he ends up with this injury, but the early reports are good, that the Bears medical people were on top of it, that thank God they got him to the hospital when they did. Nobody is talking about the horrific possibility of losing a leg, but it is something they're going to have to watch closely over the next couple weeks. It's the critical part of the rehabilitation.
Yeah, we're not going to relive it, you're right, but I just do want to point out that it unfortunately couldn't have happened to a better guy in the Bears locker room. There's no one tougher either. There's no one who's been through more. I think it was tight ends coach Frank Smith who said if there was a Hall of Fame for toughness, Zach Miller would be a first ballot guy. I thought that was a good line. I think I read it from our buddy Adam Hoag on Twitter yesterday. Just want to give him credit for that. And then the other side of it, and again, we can move on after that. The NFL should be ashamed of itself for the way it blew the call. Al Rivera in his first year as the head of officiating. It was blown horribly, and the explanations for it have been even worse since. So I guess that's all I'll say on that.
Well, what is particularly shameful is that Riveron came out on Tuesday and with a video presentation tried to defend the call and just made himself look like a bigger moron. You have his two predecessors, Dean Blandino and Mike Pereira, each former heads of NFL officiating. By the way, Pereira, I believe, in charge when this whole process of the catch thing was created and isn't happy with it. They both stated pretty emphatically that Miller caught the ball, that it's a misinterpretation of the process of the catch rule. And one can only hope that after the season, the competition committee will get together and get rid of the stupidity of the process of the catch. And the irony of it is that the rule existed without any real controversy for a number of years before the Calvin Johnson play that happened at Soldier Field and went in the Bears' favor and against the Lions. But for 4, 5, 10 years, whatever it was, officials knew what the rule was and interpreted it properly with good judgment. And then in that play, decided to make this a controversy, and it's one that just gets worse every time they mess with it.
Yeah, no doubt. There's obviously been other countless examples. Des Bryant in the playoffs a couple years ago at Lambeau. And I think, Hub, that for true football fans, it's kind of like with injuries. You never want to see guys get hurt. You never want to benefit on a call like that. I know Bears fans will agree. Yes, they did get they were on the right side of that blown call a number of years ago. But you just want to see great players make great plays, which Calvin Johnson did, and he got screwed that day, and so did Zach Miller the other day.
Well, but, yeah, and here's the difference, and it has nothing to do with any personal feelings or bias I may have towards the Cowboys or Des Bryant. I was on the sidelines for Westwood One that day, literally 10 feet from him where he landed on that play. He did not complete the process of the catch. Based on the way the rule is written, when he went to the ground, he lost the ball immediately upon hitting the ground. There was some justification for that call. In the Calvin Johnson call and the Zach Miller call, there's no justification for these. They've caught the ball, they've rolled over, they've come up with it. And so that I guess is my point, is if they're not going to change the rule, at least encourage the officials to use some common sense in how they call it.
It was one of those two guys, either Blandino or Pereira, I believe, that said it should be what a consensus of 50 guys in a bar would decide on. And while that sounds a little silly, it's true. Let's not try and reinvent the wheel with this. If it looks like a catch, it's probably a catch. So this isn't the NFL officiating podcast. I think that's all I have to say. I don't know about you. Let's spin it to the column you wrote yesterday, because I think it's a good segue, and I think it was a really good column up at profootballweekly.com/Bears, just talking, Hub, about how the expectations have changed a little bit. You had predicted in a best case scenario, maybe the Bears get to 8-8 this season. That would, of course, require what a 5-3 second half. If my math is okay today. Mm-hmm. But your reasoning for it, I think you said you think it's still attainable. But obviously, this has been very far from a best case scenario for the Bears, and I think it speaks to the growth we're seeing from this team to be able to overcome some of that.
Yeah, we should clarify for folks because we talk about this every week, and let's be real specific. We put the podcast together for you midday on Thursday because when you said my column, I thought you were going to talk about the Fangio column on Thursday. So let's go with the 8-8 column first.
Sure.
Coming into the season, and this is not about, gee, I was right, I was wrong, but I think people who analyze this thing closely during the off season, or at least myself and several other of the veteran beat guys, you know, that we work with, could see that there was room for dynamic improvement on the defense on this football team this year. And I wrote a column sometime last August that what I expected to happen was that they would struggle in the first half, start to play better after that brutal four-game stretch, and that there were some interesting things that could happen in the second half of the season based on the schedule. The problem with that is that whenever you analyze the schedule before the season starts, you end up making mistakes.
Yeah.
Philadelphia looked like a winnable game coming into the season. Mm-hmm. Now it doesn't really look like a winnable game. Then you turn it around. I think the Bears are going to split with the Packers this year. I think the Bears are going to split with the Lions this year. The Packers without Aaron Rodgers are a whole different animal. They still have more talent on that roster, 1 through 53, than the Bears do, but they don't play defense nearly as well as the Bears do. So you don't know how that game's going to go a week from Sunday when Hundley comes into town. They're going to beat Cleveland. They can beat Cincinnati. All of a sudden, if this team plays the way they did the last 4 weeks, going 2-2, but playing the way they did, and then you look at the 8 opponents that are coming, some good things are going to happen. Now, will it be 5-3? Will it be 4-4, 3-5? I don't know. But you have to remember that coming into the season, they were coming off 3-13. They were one of the three worst teams in the NFL.
Right.
And there were a lot of people around Chicago who believed they were going to be one of the three worst teams again. And there were a lot more coming out of that Green Bay game on Thursday night when they embarrassed themselves to fall to 1-3.
So you just piqued my interest, got me thinking a little bit about the Bears versus the Packers 1-53. Let's save that for next week, though. I think maybe the gap isn't what we think it is.
It's not what it was a year ago or 2 years
right.
ago. Yeah.
So let's save that, though, for next week, and then let's try and spin it forward a little bit because you just had another really nice segue there. The other column you wrote about Vic Fangio, and Vic Fangio is a lame duck. We want to talk about how badly this Bears team will need to re-sign Kyle Fuller, how badly they're going to need to overhaul the wide receiving core altogether. The one that probably flies under the radar is Vic Fangio, and when you look at the progress that this defense has made, if the Bears get to 8-8 and it's a 5-win improvement, John Fox is saving his job. I mean, I don't think there's really any question about that, likely, but Vic Fangio is a lot bigger question mark, so why don't you kind of, I've teed you up now, go into that column and let's debate.
Well, it's a complicated scenario. It's not complicated, but it's a scenario that involves a lot of variables, I guess is the better way to put it. And obviously it starts with John Fox. John Fox is not out of contract this year. He
right.
has one more contract following this season. I think what is concerning in the case of Fox is this NFL mantra that coaches shouldn't coach in the last year of their contract. Either you fire him or you extend him. Okay? And so what you got to look at with John Fox is if he goes from 3-13 to 8-8, can you fire him? That does not seem very justifiable at all to me. But then when you take 6-10 and 3-13, so you're coming in 9-23,
yep.
even at 8-8, you're still just 17-31. Can you give him a contract extension? I don't see how you can. And so what you can do is you can extend him by 1 year, and I'm not sure what that really accomplishes, but at least he's not a lame duck coach. But one of the reasons you don't want a lame duck coach in his last year is because it becomes so hard to fire assistants and hire quality coordinators in particular.
Yep.
Do they want to come somewhere, even if they're going to get a 2 or 3 year deal, where the head coach is likely to be gone in a year? So now you come to Vic Fangio. Vic Fangio is out of contract. This is the last
year. Is that unusual? Let me just cut you off for a moment. How did that arrangement work? You'd think normally your coordinators are affixed with your head coach contractually, or is
no,
that not
that
how
that
it works?
No, that is not how it works.
Okay.
When a coordinator gets a 3-year deal, which Fangio did, that's a pretty good deal.
Okay.
When a head coach wouldn't take the job with a 3-year deal. They want
right.
5, they get 4.
Yeah.
And so
okay.
there's nothing unusual about that. You want the head coach to have some flexibility in his second and third year if he's not happy with his coordinator.
Makes sense.
The problem here is that Vic Fangio probably should be a head coach in the NFL, and I don't understand why he's not. He's only interviewed a few times. The one job that he interviewed for seriously and didn't get was San Francisco, which turned out to be a blessing for him, because who wanted to be in that mess towards the end with Trent Baalke and Jed York? You know, whether things are better or not now, we really don't know. We'll see how it goes with John Lynch there. But at the end of the day, he does want to be a head coach. He is 59 years old. There's only one comp I can find for a guy who has never been a head coach at the age of 59 who got the chance, and that is Bruce Arians, who at the age of 60 became the interim head coach of the Indianapolis Colts,
right.
Was voted both the NFL Coach of the Year and Assistant Coach of the Year because he was both, got the job in Arizona the following year, and a year after that was the NFL Coach of the Year again at 62. I think Fangio is that kind of coach. He is not only a defensive genius, but he is excellent in terms of handling his players, handling the media, the way he carries himself, and he's been a winner. I mean, he won big in San Francisco. But, you know, the Bears, if they were to fire Fox, would they interview Fangio? We don't know that. It probably looks now like it wouldn't be fair to fire Fox if, in fact, they end up winning 7 or 8 games. So now you look at other teams around the league. Cleveland's going to have a new head coach, although suggesting Cleveland's going to do anything intelligent, who knows? They've got an interesting young defense. Fangio, I would think, would be a guy I'd want to interview. There's going to be at least 3 or 4, maybe 5 or 6 other jobs. Somebody could get smart and offer him a head job, and he's gone, okay? Let's assume he doesn't get the head job. Maybe he doesn't interview well. We don't know what the reasons are that he hasn't got a head job so far. There were reports of some friction between Fox and Fangio late last season and after the season. They both discounted it. They both said there's nothing to it. But now you got a situation where even if he doesn't get a head job, there's clearly going to be 4, 5, 6 coordinator openings. If there is, in fact, a problem between him and Fox, they're not going to be able to retain him.
So here's what I think we're saying. What if it came down to a decision and we just said we think? And this is all, you know, the Bears have a lot of work to do, obviously. They have to have a winning second half even to get to 500 for us to kind of be on the money with this. But what if it comes down to a choice between John Fox and Vic Fangio? I think you mentioned Bruce Arians. I think he still qualifies as the one that got away in recent years to Bears fans. Adam Gase may be number 2 on that list. I know he's had some success. Yes, he's had a little rough patch here of late. But I know other Bears fans kind of view it that way, too. Could it be number 3 if Fangio were to get away for another coordinator job? Would that be the incentive for Ryan Pace to make a bold move and say, here's what I think about Fox. I'm impressed with what he's done this year. I think he's a good football coach, but I'm not sure his ceiling is to take the Bears fans to where they want to go. Maybe he can guide the Bears to a Super Bowl. He's had opportunities to win them twice. He hasn't yet. Maybe that's his ceiling. He can rebuild a program and get them to the mountaintop, not scaling it. Is there a possibility, at least, that Ryan Pace might say, well, I want to see what Vic Fangio can do, because I think at this point we know what Fox can do. We appreciate what you have done, but if this is a choice, if I'm going to risk losing one of the great defensive minds in the game who probably had a lot to do with this unit's rebirth this year, I'm going to go ahead and push all my chips in and do it.
Well, listen, absolutely, there's a choice. You know, Ryan Pace gets to make that call. And even at 8-8, let's remember that Phil Emery came in and fired Lovie Smith coming off of 10-6. He let him coach for a year. He went 10-6, and then he fired him.
Yeah.
Now, Phil Emery turned out to be kind of a boob as a general manager.
Yeah,
he's a good scout.
That turned out to be a mistake, I'd say.
But the point is, yeah, you can do it. Yeah. You know, and I think Ryan Pace is light years ahead of Phil Emery in terms of where he's at in the job. I don't pretend to know what Ryan Pace is thinking about this. And by the way, I'm not lobbying for Fox to get fired.
Nor am I.
But I think
let's
what
be
we're
clear
talking about
yep.
here is that who would you rather have if you're going to lose one? And if I'm going to lose one, I'd rather have Fangio than Fox. And you're not going to. And what we don't know, here's the great unknown. Can you keep both? Okay. Were the reports of the friction either inaccurate or have they been made up? And is Fangio now excited about what he's building here on defense? Does he trust what Pace and Fox are doing? Does he think this is his best chance to continue to be successful? Maybe he does a 1 or a 2 year deal. So it's all a conversation.
Yeah.
None of this is a report that we've got some exclusive that one of these things is going to happen. But it is probably the most important decision facing Ryan Pace right now, because I got to tell you, I think Kyle Fuller may be tough to re-sign. You got to consider some things here. Right now, unless something crazy happens in the second half, he's going to not only be a Pro Bowler, he might be a first-team All-Pro cornerback. He's played that well the first half of the season. He doesn't have the interceptions to go with
it. He's got
to
get the ball production.
When people go to vote, but actually he's responsible for the Adrian Amos touchdown
and he's still going to have a career high in pass breakups by the time it's all said and done.
So at the end of the day, he's playing great cornerback is the point. He's going to be very expensive.
Bad penalty last week, but we can look past that because he's got a nice resume building in 2017.
He's going to be very expensive, but here's the issue. He's a guy for 3 years who didn't do much of anything. He had a great rookie start. Second half of that rookie year wasn't very good. Second year, he didn't take a step forward. Third year, he disappeared.
Yep.
Kyle Fuller comes with a potential rap. Is he one of these guys who, if he's not 100% healthy, isn't going to be out on the field doing what he's doing? And you've got to balance that before you give him $30, $40 million guaranteed. That's the price tag right now. Stephen Gilmore got $40 million guaranteed without ever having a season like Fuller is having right now, and he got it from the Patriots. So that's the decision the Bears have to make. I think they've got a tough call on Christian Jones now. I want Christian Jones back. I think Jarrell Freeman is probably done as a Bear. They like Nick Kwiatkowski, but Kwiatkowski has never put together 3-4 games like Jones has. I want both of them. You need that depth there along with Trevathan. Got to get him taken care of. Other than that, they don't have significant free agent concerns. Maybe you bring Prince Amukamara back. Maybe you don't. There's no other starter who's going to be out of contract. You're going to let Mike Glennon move on. You're going to save $15 million in cap space there. So I think the single biggest decision facing Ryan Pace right now and the single biggest problem is, what does he do about Fangio? And is there a way you can keep him around? Because if you lose Fangio, you know, you mentioned Adam Gase. Adam Gase, your opinion, you may be right. He doesn't belong in this conversation. You know, he's good. He also, after his most recent game, said, I have the worst offense in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And so, he did a nice job last year. But I think the Dolphins got on a roll. The Raiders got on a roll. Those things happen, you know. It doesn't mean that they've got great coaches who are going to be able to maintain
that. But Bruce Arians has really fallen off now, too. And yes, he has the Coach of the Year hardware to show for it. And yes, he did get within a half of a Super Bowl, I believe. Yeah, they were competitive in the second half against Carolina. But
he's fallen off after four outstanding seasons as a head coach, one in Indianapolis, three in Arizona, and serious health issues that have come along with this. So let's not remember.
I guess I just throw Gase in because it's more recent, and obviously 10-6 last year. He's 4-3. He hasn't been working with a ton. And I think it's an interesting parallel between Fangio's candor with the media. You talk about how he's good spokesman of the team. We know Bruce Arians tells it like it is. And what did Adam Gase say before trading Jay Ajayi earlier this week? My offense is hot trash, and the fans may not like it, but I'm going to do what we need to do to get this thing moving forward.
Here's an important piece to consider, Arthur, is if you're going to put Adam Gase in, I guess you got to put Sean McVay in this conversation too, don't you? I mean, he's taking the Rams.
How did he get away from the Bears?
I'm not saying about getting away from the Bears. I'm talking about these young assistants that everybody gets excited about that you don't want to lose. Now all of a sudden, why didn't somebody else figure out McVay? It's way too early to say that or to know that. Vic Fangio has a body of work.
Sure.
I mean, he did this at Stanford. He did this with the 49ers. He's doing it with the Bears now. He is in a class above these other guys that we're talking about.
And let's spend a couple more minutes on that on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. Check us out on iTunes. Make sure you're subscribed. Leave us ratings and reviews. He's Hub. I'm Arthur. Make sure you check out our sponsor, Loot Crate. The best surprise you know is coming. I'm telling you to check out lots of stuff. Make sure you get to our website as well, because it's a really good column that Hub wrote. There's some parallels actually between Buddy Ryan and what could potentially happen here with Vic Fangio. But I thought what he said last week, Hub, was very telling, Vic, when he was speaking at Halas, saying now he has the players. You perked my ears up because you said maybe this is the best opportunity for him. He's had this thing growing and he knows the personnel so well. So I think that's a big selling point here. The Bears now have some of the best front seven ammunition in the NFL. They're starting to think they've got some playmakers in the secondary. Vic is 60. Does he want to go to a team? If they're hiring coordinators, they're probably in more of a rebuild, and it looks like the Bears may be coming out the other end of this rebuild, at least defensively.
It's really pretty simple. I mean, if he's going to get a chance to be a head coach, he's gone, if that chance is not here. If he's going to be a defensive coordinator, the only reason to leave is if there is an issue between him and Fox. And I tell you, you know, I'm around the team as much as anybody. I've never seen it. Mm-hmm. Nobody's ever seen it. Vic is pretty blunt and pretty frank, and he's never really dropped any hints that there is.
Right.
These were reports that some guys had that they thought it was going on behind the scenes. I don't have any information to add to that.
They all have egos, guys. There's 32 head coaches in the NFL, 64, I guess, 96 coordinators in the NFL. It's inherent in the position. So Vic's got one. Fox has one, and it wouldn't be be surprised if there was some butting of the heads behind the scenes. But again, we can't confirm that. We're just sort of speculating or just discussing how fascinating of a dynamic this is. So just a couple minutes left on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. Anything else that jumped out at you at Hub? You were at Halas all week before the guys went on bye. It sounds like expectations have been recalibrated a little bit for the second half.
Well, you talk to the defensive guys, and they're all talking about we still have goals to attain. They have goals they set out, you know, to achieve at the start of the season. John Fox put a description on those goals. He said, we want to win the division. And you know, you can't laugh at it. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
You are, you know, what, well, I guess what, just two games behind. No, you're three games behind the Minnesota Vikings. You do have one to play against them. And so that is a bit much to expect, although who knows what's going to happen.
Look at what they've overcome. Well, what they've done is really impressive.
Yeah,
too.
But going forward, you still don't know what's going to happen with their quarterback situation. Because I'm sorry.
It'll be Teddy before long.
I can't convince myself that Case Keenum is a guy that you can be serious about.
I don't think Mike Zimmer can either. Yeah. It seems like it's heading back toward Teddy as soon as he's ready.
Well, yeah, and that doesn't excite me that much either. Bradford's the best quarterback on that team.
And the least reliable, probably.
I don't know if we're going to see him again this year. I don't know if we're going to see him this Sunday. You know, you don't know with him.
Yep.
And if you do see him this Sunday, will you see him the following Sunday? So, but at the end of the day, the idea that the Bears are going to make up 3-8 over the Vikings, who clearly have a better roster than them, is a different subject. So I think the takeaway from being up there is that the defense is really starting to believe. I think that it's reasonable to assume that this defense is going to play more often than not the second half of the season the way they have the last few weeks. There's going to be another meltdown somewhere along the line. Maybe it's Philadelphia. You know, we'll see what happens. Offensively, what more can you expect? Okay. A lot of the focus is going to be on the health of this offensive line.
Yep.
One of the things that has been quiet because it's bye week is the Bears have not had to answer any questions about the fact that neither Kyle Long or Cody Whitehair finished that game
in New Orleans. Did Josh Sitton also not finish?
No, Josh Sitton ended up at center.
Right. He got moved.
And your backup guards are tackles because Ronis Grassou, A, I'm not sure can play in the league, but B, he's got a bad hand.
Yeah.
And there's no question about it. I mean, the thing's clubbed up. It's not like the guy's, you know, not trying. I mean, he's hurt right now. So how much more development you get out of this offense in the second half. Everybody keeps talking about the receivers and Trubisky. That's really not going to change much. I mean, Dontrell Impen is a nice add, but he's not a number one. And unless you get a number one, you're not going to make the guys around him better. Where you can get a lot better is if you can become a dominant running team behind a line that can protect Trubisky,
right. And
then you can start to do some more things, and that will free up some options for you, even with mediocre receivers. So that's something, it's a great segue to where we'll be next week when we come back and they get back to work. We'll find out how healthy this line is and what we think we can expect out of them going forward. And then we'll know more about, you know, what the future looks like.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. We saw the Packers struggles with their offensive line banged up the past couple weeks, too. And we know with a young quarterback the importance of having him protected. And I think if there's one thing in Mitch Trubisky individually, and again, it's going to be tough to evaluate with no wide receivers, although we'll see how he's able to build a rapport with an NFL-caliber player in Dontrell Inman. I just want to see the fourth quarter improvements, because if you look at the numbers, they're not pretty. I'm not saying it's all on him, and I know he's kind of been in hero mode at the end of the Vikings game and against the Saints, which both resulted in interceptions. But I just would like to see the fourth quarter statistics pick up a little bit, because that's obviously ultimately how he's going to be gauged after wins and losses.
You know, we're getting to where we've got to wrap it up, but here's what to me started to become the obvious and maybe least interesting and most interesting conversation over the last couple days. You look at where Deshaun Watson's at. You look at where Mitch Trubisky's at. You look at what Ryan Pace did to get Trubisky when he didn't have to do anything to get Watson. And that is the comparison that they're going to deal with for the next 3-4 years. Okay.
Yeah.
It is ridiculous and unfair right now, because what, and listen, I said it before the draft, I said it the night of the draft on the score. I've said it a few times since. I preferred Watson, thought he was a better prospect for the reasons that you're seeing right now. You knew what you were getting. He is NFL ready.
Right.
You cannot discount those 35 games at Clemson in the SEC, the four BCS playoff games, the two title games.
He should be further along, obviously.
The fact that, that the Clemson offense, while also a spread offense, at least had some NFL pro sets in it. He took some snaps under center.
Yep.
Trubisky never did any of this. You know, he had these 13 games, not really even preparing for the NFL. And so what you have to judge this by is what you've seen from Trubisky. He has proven to be a much better athlete than any of us expect him to be because we hadn't seen it. It just wasn't there on tape. And he's got a better arm than I thought he did. There is a concern that Mitch talked about in the locker room on Wednesday before taking off for the bye. He himself acknowledged that he's had some accuracy issues because of his mechanics and his footwork. And this is something
more when he's stationary than on the move.
This is something you and I have talked about.
Yep.
They rave about how accurate he is on the move, and he is. It's impressive. It's Aaron Rodgers-esque.
Yep.
But when he's stat 2 feet on the ground in the pocket, he's not as accurate. And so that is going to be a focus of this bye week, something that they're working on with him, with his mechanics. He addressed it himself, and that'll be another thing to watch closely these first couple games as they come out. But what Bears fans have to keep in mind, Arthur, is to try and make the comparison between Trubisky and Watson any time before the end of next season. It's just ridiculous because it's not meaningful.
We really only have 2 minutes left, and maybe we'll just spin this forward into next week's podcast. But does Jimmy Garoppolo's name belong in this conversation because of the team that made the trade for him, and it's the same team the Bears traded up a spot for to get Trubisky, and there were all the rumblings that the Bears were in on Garoppolo when there wasn't actually a first round price tag at stake last offseason? Does he belong in this mix at all, do you think?
I don't think so, because the Patriots were not dealing him for just a number two at the time of the draft.
Sure.
You know, this is rolled forward now. They tried to figure out their options.
Yep.
I mean, if you want to bring up Garoppolo, you can't help but talk about the incompetent morons in Cleveland, but you know,
and that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah,
for sure.
We should do one Pro Football Weekly Cleveland podcast. It's going to be so much fun, and they're such easy targets. But I don't think so. I mean, the fact that he's a local kid from Rolling Meadows and played at Eastern, you'd love to see him here.
We'll see him firsthand at Soldier Field. I believe it's Week 13. He will be starting by then, I'm sure, even if Kyle Shanahan's not ready to admit it yet.
And I got to tell you, I was out in Foxborough. I guess it was last year now
for the joint practice.
And I was really impressed with the kid. Mm-hmm. And then we saw what he did in what amounted to a game and a half, you know.
Without Gronk.
Yeah.
Without all his starting offensive line.
And so I think he's got a chance to be really good.
I do too.
But I can't say emphatically that he's got a better chance to be a franchise quarterback than Trubisky. Again, it's too early, mm-hmm. you know. So I think that circumstances dictated the Garoppolo move, and I can't look back and question or fault the Bears in any way for where they ended up or where Garoppolo ended up.
We'll discuss that more on the Pro Football Weekly podcast later this afternoon. For now, we really are out of time here, so I'm just going to cut us loose. It's the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. Big thank you to our producer, Dan Mott, Hub Arkish, Arthur Arkish. Thank you to Luke Crate. Check us out on iTunes and enjoy the bye week. We'll be back with you next week on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast.